I do understand for some people burning the boats and going all in. It makes sense for them because that's their version of success. My version was I wanted the skill set, work with the Forest Service, fly to Finland to work with the Finnish Police Department. I wanted to run a field office for Air Force Office of Special Investigations and run a joint task force in East Africa for a year and run a field office in Western Turkey where I was a diplomat to the Turkish National Police. Career is tough and some careers suck, but if you can get the right balance and really understand the outcome that you want from it, you can choose the right place to be. Don't chase the money, chase the experience.
You're listening to the Real Estate Runway podcast, powered by Quattro Capital, where we're all about alternative business and investment strategies to help you amplify life and maximize wealth. Here's your host, Mo the Connector.
I really want to start back at the career story because I know like many of us, you came out, you got out of school and you're like, I mean, I myself saw Accenture. I started Accenture in 2001. When did you start with them?
97, right out of college.
Yeah. Right out of college. I did too. And I'm like, great opportunity, build skills. Walk us through how Accenture and your career started unfolding.
Yeah, man. Just as an end point, I'm 47 now, and as you said, I'm out of the W-2 world. I am, and even though I'm very entrepreneurially minded and I'm a real estate guy and all that type of stuff, I'm grateful for my careers, I should say. So I ended up at University of Virginia on doing mechanical engineering on an ROTC scholarship. So my military career came from that. I was actually Navy first, but Air Force was offering full scholarships to minorities and engineers. I'm like, I'm double on that. So they gave me a full 100% ride. I got commissioned as a second lieutenant into the Air National Guard right after college. 4 years later, the Guard wasn't a place for me because it was very static. It's just in one location in Baltimore. But I got recruited into something called Air Force Office of Special Investigations. I was a military police officer. Got recruited to them and became a federal agent and finished my career as a federal agent through what's called OSI, which is a sister agency to the FBI. Wonderful experience. I ran field offices all over the world, Turkey, Las Vegas, DC, a task force in East Africa, et cetera. So that's the military side, but the Accenture side, or what was Anderson Consulting in 97, and they got rebranded in 2001. Dude, because I started traveling when I was 15, consulting was very appealing to me because I had two offers coming out of college on the civilian side. I had Procter & Gamble running a production line in Hunt Valley, Maryland. Same place every day, same factory. I couldn't do that. And then Anderson gave me an offer, or Accenture gave me an offer. And when I went on a visit with a consultant, he was telling me about his lifestyle. The fact that, look, he worked on a project for 6 months, and if he didn't like that project, don't sweat it because you could be on a different one. He also told me, because my money head was going, he was like, if you work out of state, you get per diem. It just, like, all of it made sense. All of it made sense. So I got hired with them, took the gig, primarily federal government, but I started to use Accenture for my own personal needs. Like, I wanted to be international, so I got an international role, et cetera. And I stayed 25 years. I didn't have to leave, but the writing was kind of on the wall, and it was a beautiful journey, man. I'm so grateful. And then, as you know, I leveraged those two paychecks for years, and I built a real estate portfolio. So that was the Accenture journey. 25 years of MC work.
You did, and so 25 years at Accenture. If somebody is going to talk to somebody who's been there, the first question that they're going to say is, "Well, you were there 25 years. Why weren't you a partner?"
Oh,
right. Right.
I forget that. Yeah. Yeah. That was intentional. That was intentional.
Yes.
So I started in 97. In 2013, I got promoted to senior manager, which is the level right under partner. And was even a little bit delayed because I deployed so many times with the military. My boss, Elaine, who I'm such a fan of hers, several times she asked me to enter the partner track. She's like, "You have the skills. You've created a lot of revenue for us, and you should be a partner." And I'm like, "Nah, I'm good." And my justification for it was for the relative salary that I was getting, 170, maybe 200 grand towards the end, I was working solid 40-hour weeks, sometimes over, but generally I could control my schedule. I didn't like the thought process of being a partner, having more management scrutiny on me. And then if you're a partner, you have visibility to upper management, you have sales targets.
Right.
There's just kind of a, and for the relative, I don't know, 50 grand, 60 grand more money, I just didn't see it as appropriate for me. What I cared more was, Elaine was the best at this. Elaine, tell me what you want for your account. Maurice, I need $25 million in sales. I got you. Let me go work on this. I'll be back in 3 weeks. She would trust me. And because she trusted me so much, I got outcomes for her. But the outcome I wanted for myself was, Accenture, give me them awesome paychecks. Don't worry about me making partner. I'm not worried about that. I'll take those paychecks and I'll go invest them in real estate systematically. So it just didn't make sense for me to be a partner. I wasn't interested. That if I did it, Chris, I would have been chasing somebody else's version of success. That was not my version of success.
Well, and that's where I want to get into is that, like, at some point, because Accenture is a very up or out culture, right? And we find that culture permeates a lot of corporate culture, a lot of technology companies where, well, wait, what's next? Okay, you're the manager. Okay, are you going to get the senior manager? You're going to get the director, the senior director. When are you going to make VP? But at some point, you were looking left and right and said, wait a second, is that money worth my time?
Yes.
And I think many of us don't really look at we're actually the asset. Our time is this very precious, highly valued asset. Where do I want to spend that? But how did you start? Number one, where did you discover that? And then how did you coexist with this upper out culture?
I felt it in 2013, so 15 years in, and I've made this post on LinkedIn and I've like reposted it several times. I was analyst to consultant. I'm a consultant. Now I want to be manager. I'm a manager. Now I want to be senior manager. I'm a senior manager. Now I want to. I was like, wait a minute. Like, the goalpost just keeps moving. And I'm not getting more freedom by getting these higher titles. I'm getting more responsibility and more things that I have to take care of that are crunching into my personal time that I'm using to open restaurants and build real estate and travel to 100 countries. And I didn't want that. The way that I competed with the culture was I didn't compete. I didn't care. I found what you do is you found the right boss to sit under. Elaine, in the last 7 years, and then my boss before her was this lady named Gail Nix. Gail was the one who I went to her in 2008. Actually, let me back up. This is important. I went to Gail in 2006 and I said, Gail, you run this global thing and I have interest in being virtual and supporting global projects. I don't want to just work for the federal government. I created and I showed her how her hiring me would generate revenue for her. So I created a solution for her to support, not a problem for her to solve. Like, oh, I want to be virtual. Can you help me? No. I worked 7 years for this amazing human, virtual, and like Finland, Norway, Sweden, Korea. I was all over the place because I was using Accenture to get those experiences. That's what I wanted, was experiences and relationships and all that. In 2008, when I got the Jones to be a police officer, I went to Gail and I said, Gail, I think I'm about to quit. And she said, why are you going to quit? I said, man, because when I was on active duty for OSI, I was helping people. Like, I was finding missing children, and it was a wonderful experience. And I said, I just want to be a street cop in my neighborhood. And she's like, you're going to give up 80% of your salary? Yeah. So being the beautiful human that she was like, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to find a way for you to do both. I went to Day Academy for the police department. And at 3 o'clock when I was done with Academy, I would log on. And Gail was like, just work as long as you can. And if you can only work 4 hours because you're tired, then take 4 hours of leave that day. Gail was the one who gave me that. All right. So long story short, I wasn't competing with anyone at Accenture. I was using Accenture to create my own experiences, my own journey, my own relationships with the head of the Portuguese FBI, who I briefed for Accenture many, many, many times, who's still a good friend of mine, right? While other people were chasing titles. And I'm not saying that that's wrong. But what I'm saying is that was not my version of success. My version of success was relationships, traveling around the world, building skills, and then on the outside, building a massive portfolio that would take care of me for the rest of my life.
And so you talk about this too. This is one of your writings on LinkedIn that I think is so powerful, is it's you're working with a purpose that's focused on your own greater purpose.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the mindset shift, right?
It should be. And the way that I articulate lifestyle design now on social, I didn't have this all designed in my head when I was in my 20s and 30s. I'm saying it all in reflection, you know?
Right, of course.
But it just all made sense to me. It made sense to leverage the W-2. And what I say about purpose and purposeful, a career is a purpose, your God-given talent to be alive.
Right.
That's a purpose. Like my best friend in high school, Allie, she graduated Yale Law. She could be at a law firm making $2 million a year, but she's an immigrant rights attorney in California, probably making less than 100 grand because her daddy worked with Hugo Chavez back in the 70s, God rest his soul. And she wanted to be part of that lineage.
Right.
That's her purpose. She has won. She is doing the thing that makes her alive, and she gets up every day. That was being a police officer for me. I didn't have a problem working 8 hours a day for Accenture and then going to be on the street at night for 10 hours. Never had a problem with it because it was my God-given reason for those 15 years to exist. Chris, when I tell you I loved it, I loved being able to give back to people in that way. So that's a purpose. And at Accenture, I enjoyed it, but it was not my purpose. It was purposeful. It was purposeful. I wanted those paychecks. I wanted the skills. And I use them and I leverage them the way that you know that I have. So I like to draw that distinction.
Well, in being purposeful, the thing is, you know, what I heard from you and I hear from you all the time is you were delivering value. You were making business cases for you to be able to have this lifestyle where you created a partnership that said, I want to be purposeful and intentional in the way that I'm approaching you, Accenture, so that I can fulfill my purpose over here.
Yes. But You nailed it, but I will say one thing. I was very, very quiet intentionally. There was very few people at Accenture who knew that I was a police officer, and there was very few people at the police department who knew I was a management consultant. I never wanted, like, if I wasn't at the office, for someone to be like, well, he must have worked patrol last night. He's tired somewhere or something like that. So for 15, 20 years, I kept it all quiet. Never told anybody.
Well, and I think that sometimes, and I think this is, you know, this is part of your story too, as we're going to start getting into, you know, some of the conversations around investing is, in we've talked about this, is when you start bucking the status quo, when you start saying, I don't want that promotion, I think I'm fine. You know, people are like, are you okay? Like, do I need to check in with you? And you're like, no. I've actually got this whole other plan. Well, what is that? Well, it involves commercial real estate. Oh, we better bring in the counselors now, right? I mean, when you start forging your own path in this standard quo world, it can be really lonely.
Dude, Chris, not only was it lonely, let me just paint you a picture of a day in the life of that when I was at the height of it, when I was full-time plus real estate. Work all day Accenture, client calls, whatever. Get on the metro from DC, get back to the house at 6 p.m., cook dinner, be with my oldest, my youngest came a little bit later, do homework with him, lie down at 7 p.m., wake up at 8:15 p.m., put on my uniform, get in my patrol car, get to roll call, hit roll call, go have dinner with the fellas and the ladies and stuff, break. And then for like 11 p.m. to 3 a.m., I was humping. Like, I was a very proactive police officer. Once 3 a.m. came, assuming there's no calls, I would go to the back lot, lean my chair back, and just wait for calls. It was me trying to get a little bit of sleep. Like, I'm just like this. And then you develop what's called radio ear. You hear your call sign or your boy calls for help. And you're like, I'm on my way, right? Okay, 6 a.m. comes, I go back to the house, I lie down for an hour, 7 a.m., my son wakes up, I start getting him ready for school, I put on my Accenture clothes, I go to court on the way to Accenture, I stop in, I check in with the state's attorneys, my cases are usually solid, so they don't need me the whole time, I get my overtime, I jump on the train, I go back to Accenture and I press repeat. That was 4 days a week I did that. And then on the weekends, I would do real estate. Man, I look back on it now and I'm like, how the F did I do all that? But I loved it so much and I was building all this other stuff on the outside. And back to your point of it being lonely, it was lonely. It was very lonely because I couldn't tell people. And I had what I pen as entrepreneurial depression. I couldn't find you. There was no LinkedIn for me to find Chris. All I had was aisle 6 of the Fairfax County Library to go get information. We weren't sharing with each other. Like, who was doing what I was doing? Plus traveling to all these countries, plus being in the military. Like, there are people who do unique things like that. But what I'm suggesting is at the time, I couldn't find anybody. And it was a very lonely process.
Mm. Well, and I think something else... I think that's really interesting about the journey too, right? Is and just for people in general, many people have this perception, and I see this a lot now is, and this is why I have a lot of respect for you advocating for the W-2, where you learn skills, you built relationships, yeah. and it enabled you to become an entrepreneur because now you're working a lot less, but many people believe that the transition to get to entrepreneur or stepping into an entrepreneur, like, let me go eject the W-2 because this life is easier, you know, because they see the result that you have now. But the transition, you know, I mean, I know for myself and my wife, as we were working corporate jobs and we wanted to learn real estate, it was you put the kids down in the evening and we're on the couch, you know, studying real estate, like trying to figure all that stuff out.
It's hard. I'm not a proponent of burn the boats. I think W-2 is wonderful. I briefed the head of the Portuguese FBI. I helped Accenture get into the U.S. Forest Service. My old boss called me. I've been gone 2 years. She called me and she said, hey, Maurice, I want you to know that we just won $150 million BPA at Forest Service. Your legacy continues, because I was the first person to get us in there. So she's like, she's still keeping me a part of it. For some people, however, I understand. I do understand for some people burning the boats and going all in and all that makes sense. But it makes sense for them because that's their version of success. My version was I wanted the skill set. I wanted to work with the Forest Service. I wanted to fly to Finland to work with the Finnish Police Department, the National Finnish Police Department on behalf of Accenture. I wanted to run a field office for Air Force Office of Special Investigations and run a joint task force in East Africa for a year and run a field office in Western Turkey where I was a diplomat to the Turkish National Police. I can't do that as an entrepreneur. I needed those experiences, man. So when I joke about this, but now I actually take it very seriously. I think I've lived 5 lifetimes at age 47 already. And I'm so grateful. So I want people, like, career is tough. And some careers suck, but if you can get the right balance and really understand the outcome that you want from it, you can choose the right place to be, right? Don't chase the money, chase the experience.
Chase the experience. And I think this is something that you really talk about in your Try Life On program, where it's like you help people understand that in the W-2, you can seek freedom.
Yes.
You can seek freedom in your W-2. And so what are the, is it the 5 freedoms that you talk about?
Yeah, it's the 5 freedoms. So my coaching is, the goal of coaching that I do is to help people build lifestyle they don't need a vacation from. When you see me in Lebanon or wherever the heck I go nowadays, or doing business for Quattro, and okay, next week I'm going to be in Cyprus. I don't take vacations anymore. It's just how I live. I want people to build a framework by which they can live their life and they feel they don't need a vacation. But that's all focused around understanding what your perfect day is. Mm. I don't know, like, I want to be in Barcelona. I want to feel the breeze off the Mediterranean, 7 a.m. Coffee's going. I have a nanny. I have enough money to get a nanny. I work from a coffee shop. I have 3 calls with investors. I do my entrepreneurial stuff. Then I go hang out with Chris. We break wine. We have a glass of wine together. F it. We have a bottle of wine together because we're such good friends. I go home. Blah, blah. Like, whatever your perfect day is, you take the 5 freedoms: time freedom, financial freedom, geographic freedom, freedom to execute your purpose, police officer.
Right.
Freedom to build meaningful relationships. Only reason I'm a developer in Cyprus is because I built a relationship with a guy who was already doing it.
Right.
If I just talk to Accenture people, I'm not a developer in Cyprus. You need to build relationships with people who are doing things you want to do. We build goals in those five buckets. Inevitably, those goals have blockers, things that are stopping you from making it happen. We co-create the actions to get over the blockers. At the end of the process, it's not that you're going to live your perfect day every day. That's impossible. But it's that you have the framework to live it whenever you want to, which is like, I'm in DC right now, brother, but on Tuesday, I'm back on a plane to the Mediterranean because I can.
Right. And that's where you want to live. And I think it's so important for people to have this mindset, because the reality is in this program, you're not going through the five freedoms and saying, okay, now go put in your resignation papers. That's not it at all.
No,
just to make sure that people are understand, because I think people get this twisted real easy. They're like, oh, to get the freedoms, I got to go eject that. No, you do that in partnership with it.
Yes. So in my case, so let's use my example. I wanted geographic freedom. I wanted to be able to work from anywhere in the world with Accenture. I wanted to support clients internationally. So I created that role that I presented to my ex-boss, Gail. It's not that I quit Accenture to go do that. It's that I presented a solution. I found a way within the construct of the W-2 that I already had to get the outcome that I wanted. On my blueprint, if you will, it would have said, geographically, I want to support everything all over the world. I want to immerse in culture. I want to feel good. I want to learn new languages. I want to eat new food. And I want to be in a business context where people respect me in a foreign place. Okay, so I didn't quit. What you do is get a virtual gig. And if you can't get it within your company, then maybe it does make sense to go externally. The thing about real estate and assets, here's the thing. Everybody can make good money in their career. I got that. But you want to buy assets along the way, because at some point in the future, you want to be able to continue your lifestyle. The W-2, that stream of income is going to stop. You either don't want to do that job, physically can't do that job, or your company is going to tell you, man, you've been here too long, right?
Right. And I want to get into that in a second, but I also want to share. So one of the things, you know, and again, this is so important for everybody to understand, is that if you have a vision for your life and you go into a job, you can make this work. Now, my example is when I started with Accenture, I wanted geographic freedom. Like, I came out of school and I wanted to travel. I wanted to see the world. And so, again, looking for those opportunities, and Accenture was a great company that provided it. In 2001, right after 9/11, when I started, there wasn't a lot of travel. Oh, you're in this, they had operations centers. So I was in one in San Ramon in Northern California. But I kept looking for different opportunities. There came this opportunity. Well, we're actually starting, we have this new SMB technology that we want to take to the enterprise. It's called Salesforce.com. You could take this training, right? And so I started taking the Salesforce.com training. The next thing you know, they're flying me all over the place because nobody had this training. I looked for that scarcity and I looked for this growing opportunity. The next thing you know, not only am I being flown all over the United States, the projects are very short. They're maybe 4 or 5 months. In between, I'm taking breaks. I'm going down to Argentina and I'm learning Spanish. I actually get to the point where I would travel to on site for a week on, a week off. The week off, I would actually be in Argentina. And this was like early 2000s. I had this crazy way that my BlackBerry was forwarding to Skype that would then forward to my mobile phone in Argentina where I'm taking calls on the street. But the thing is, and this is what I want to share with everyone, is that when you have the vision and you're able to add value to the companies, and to your point, who knew about that? Nobody knew about it. Like, I kept that to myself. I kept that under wraps, because the thing is sometimes when you are trying to do something that is not the norm, you have to be respectful of the fact that people aren't going to understand that.
And sometimes you tell the wrong people, the crabs in a barrel thing starts to happen. I don't know. It's just something you got to, I prefer to think that people are good. I inherently like people. You just have to be very careful about your dreams. Like, if you're putting your dreams out there, all of a sudden shit starts hitting your dream, or people start downplaying or saying it's not possible. I don't like possible. I like to make extraordinary ordinary. I like to go to Finland Arctic 5 times in 5 months. I like to work for the Portuguese FBI or the National Spanish Police. Whatever that thing is, you can do it inside the construct of your company, or find the company that is doing that thing and get hired by them and use the W-2. I talk about all the time, leverage the W-2 more than it leverages you. Use it for the experience that you want. I'm glad I was a police officer. I would have did that for free. But man, I used that. I got myself into a position where I had a take-home car as a part-time officer. I had a take-home car. I would volunteer for stuff. I would do task force stuff all over the county. Mm. Because at night, I was generally dealing with bad people. But during the day, when I would volunteer, I got to shut down intersections for kids walking to school. You know how good that made me feel? That I could just get out of the car as a police officer in my uniform and be like, just stop, stop, and let the kiddos come across. And I would talk to them while they're coming across and be like, I'm not even on duty in these cases, right? I'm just in my marked car. The fact that I could do that gave me so much joy. And I was just leveraging that job for the joy that I wanted out of it, man. And I think people should think about it more holistically than just, I'm just going to get a paycheck.
Again, posting on LinkedIn, where you have a lot of great social content, you really break down the steps to get to financial independence. Can you walk people through that quickly?
Yeah. So I do post about it. I wish I had it with me. But what I talk about is, first, you got to have a why. My why was very clear in the beginning. I wanted some level of freedom. And that came from, I started traveling when I was 15. I traveled in France. It really hit me as an inner city kid that life could be different. And then when I was 21, I found Personal Finance for Dummies. Then I realized if I could generate passive income, then I would have the space and time to go have those feelings that I had when I was 15. That's it. That was my why the whole time, was I just want to do what I want, when I want, how I want, period. Okay. You got to have a why. Okay, then you got to have paychecks. You take those amazing two paychecks and you pay yourself first. Step three is pay yourself first. You are your number one bill. Why is it that the cable company has more priority than future Chris or Maurice? It doesn't. You pay yourself first. You store money away, not save money. You store money. So meaning if you get net $5,000 a month in your paychecks and you have $2,500 worth of bills, then you have the ability to store $2,500. You're storing it. You're putting it somewhere systematically. And once you have enough in that storage to buy an asset, you go buy the asset. So for me, the asset was real estate. As soon as I had enough money in storage to go buy a piece of real estate or sometimes stock, I would do a couple things here and there. I did it. Now here's the key. Once you buy that asset, and if and when that asset creates some kind of cash flow or equity or whatever, you take that equity and cash, you don't spend that. You couple that with your paycheck, and then you do it again, and you store again until you get to the point where you have enough to buy an asset. Again, now you're buying asset number two, number three. And what happens is over time, the time compresses to get the asset. So I found myself, the 2000s were a little bit funny because you could get no doc loans and you didn't have to do down payments. That was a little bit funny time. But in general, I was buying an asset like once every 11 months or something. And then by the time compounds, when I hit age 41, something crazy happened. My wealth just hit this inflection point because the time for me to buy assets was down to a month. I was buying one asset a month. I didn't even realize it until it was happening because I was so systematic about my process over the years that it started to compound on itself. And that's how I got myself to financial freedom. So it was single family homes, 2002 to 2015, got up to 35 single family homes. A bunch of them had equity in them. I sold the ones that had equity. I paid off the other ones. And I found myself with 18 paid off homes generating $160,000. And that was 2014, and I think I was like 38 years old. But as we were saying before, careers are purposeful. I didn't want to quit. I stayed working for another 8 years. I really, when you have enough money to cover your basic needs, you start to realize that money was never the goal in the first place.
Right.
You realize it. And, yes. And I went through it. I went through that.
Well, and the thing is it's funny is, as I started building up my passive income and I was working is you enjoy, like you're playing a little bit more loose. You're not playing tight and you're in there. Yeah. And I just remember that, before I was so you know, thinking all the time, my performance, where am I at, versus I know the last role that I had at GitLab, when I came in and I was very purposeful, I'm coming to this company, we're going to take it through an IPO, take some more gold coins off the table. But I already had really solid passive income coming in. I was more, how are you doing, Maurice? How, like, let's connect. Yeah. And I was much more, to your point, about the connections. And then the work just came easy. The work just flowed. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's so interesting the way that that happens.
It does. And now you have the backdrop of why, when I was asked to enter the partner track, it didn't matter. It didn't matter because I already had the system for creating wealth on the outside by systematically storing my money and buying assets. If I would have got another 60 grand and then added 40 hours of work time to my week, then I'm taking away from my ability to build my portfolio and have all these experiences around the world. Right? So that's what was so confusing and maddening to people. People were like, you've been here 20 years and you're not, why are you not partner? And I was just, I would just kind of shrug it off and just be like, oh, no, I don't want to be partner. It's the same thing. And I know we're talking about the investing side, but I do want to say one thing back on the career side. It's the same thing in the police department. Because I was a federal agent, because I hit the title of lieutenant colonel, I have the qualifications to run a mid-sized police department as a chief of police. So when I got there, people were like, damn, you've done task forces and murders and espionage and all that. Why are you not a detective? I don't want to be a detective. I came to being a police officer at age 33 so I could be in the huddle. I miss football. I just wanted to go to roll call and just go out on the street and be one of the guys and the girls and could just go do good work. Why is everybody so focused on I got to get to lieutenant or captain or chief of police or... That was not my purpose. But the reason I had the ability to say that's not my purpose is because I built this portfolio on the outside. I didn't need the money. I was there for the experience. So that's how it all ties together. Real estate and investing is very purposeful. It is not about money. It is about the ability to live life the way you want to live it. And that's what that money gave me.
Well, and I think when you have a purpose, right? I mean, my purpose was... And is the fact that I want to be able, as my boys are now, 9 and 10 respectively, I want to be able to walk with them into manhood, and I want to be able to be present. I want to be able to prioritize that journey and go on some adventures with them and walk with them in that. And I think when you have that purpose, I mean, this is something that you and I talk a lot about, which is this whole concept that is counterintuitive, not just to W-2, but also counterintuitive to investing, which is deleverage. When you have an investor and you're like, oh yeah, I'm sitting on, you know, these 10 paid off homes, or I've got five, you know, paid off homes, and they're just sending me these checks, my baseline. Oh, you need to exit out of those and you need to get leverage and lever up. No, I don't. I'm actually good. But this is where purpose, when you apply purpose across W-2 and investing, and your focus is really, where am I spending my time? Where am I lining up against my freedom goals? Mm-hmm. Your whole perception or your whole definition of success changes.
It does, brother. And when I got to that level of investing in 2014, where I had 160 grand, I got really bored. Because I was still pressing repeat on the same methodology that I had been using since 2002. That's how I got the push into multifamily, because I wanted to do something different and I wanted to learn, right? So I did 8 multifamily deals on my own, by myself. I had 1 or 2 partners, but it wasn't systematic. It was just me learning. 2 of them were mobile home parks, which is interesting. And then in 2020, started Quattro Capital with 4 other partners. And you know that story. We've done 220 million of real estate in the last 3 years. That's not me trying to be the biggest dude or have the most assets under management. No, that was me trying to help people on their financial freedom journey get it faster than I did, because mine was really slow. But where I am now on a personal level, and you and I talked about this, I'm actually deleveraging a bit. Meaning I still have some loans on some single family stuff that I got later in life, maybe in 2018, 19. I got like a 220 grand payday out of this other multifamily project. I didn't go get another multifamily. I paid off one of the single family loans that I had. So now that place is $1,600 of cash flow added to my pocket for the rest of life. You want to get yourself in a position where you are stable. And then the other thing is, now I don't think about money at all. I'm not thinking about growing my business. I'm not thinking about being the biggest guy. I'm thinking about having the most experiences and relationships that I possibly can for the rest of my life. So I just bought a house. I'm trying to buy a house. I'll probably close next week. And I intentionally bought that house with cash because I don't want the leverage. But I bought it because it's an entertaining house. Like, I'm going to be able to have friends and family come over. Everybody hangs out in the gourmet kitchen and stuff like that. Man, I want to live. I am true to form to Bill Perkins' book, Die with Zero. I am no longer optimizing for money. I am optimizing for life fulfillment at age 47. I put in 25 years of a ton of work, and now I'm young. I lost all this weight. I'm working out like a bandit. I'm spending time with friends. I'm spending time with my kids way more. I'm plugged into life and planet as I should be, man. And I hope people use career to invest so you can get to the point where this is what you're focused on. The good aspects of why we're alive on this planet.
And I want to rewind it a little bit because, you know, when we're all trying to figure out this financial independence, financial freedom,
yeah,
is when you make that first investment, because I'm sure like when you bought your first home and you realized, okay, I'm getting what, $500 a month off this thing?
It was like 200 bucks, I think, is my
there you
first
go.
Deal.
There you go. No, and I, you know, and so you're getting $200 a month. You start scratching your head, you know, and you're saying, how does this work? Like, how does this all work? And then you realize, okay, you have to, again, have this long view, and you're like, well, okay, that takes out a couple of my bills. But, and honestly, what you're doing is you're reinvesting it. You're not using it, but that's in your mind. You're saying, okay, I have cash flow that, you know, if I don't have a job, I can pay a few of my bills. Then you stack the next one and you get a few more, you get living expenses. But there is a point where you understand how this works. And I told you my story where we sold our house in the Bay Area that, you know, again, became, it was this prized possession. Like, oh, you're in the Bay Area. Yeah. You got to get a home there. So we had to work for equity to get the home. Then we sold this home for, you know, a couple million dollars, bought our primary residence, 5 single family homes that again, all of a sudden started covering all these expenses. And we learned right away, oh, right. So now we traded one home for 6 homes and no living, no, you know, it covered mortgage, it covered electricity and the home insurance and the taxes and stuff. But that was the lights on. But for you, as you were climbing up, how did you start, you know, seeing, okay, this is how it works and having faith in the process?
When I coach students now, we create a financial blueprint where they can actually see how that all works, plotted out. I wasn't that prescriptive. When I started going to the library in 2002, 2003, because I bought a place to live, it appreciated 30 grand in 3 months, and it was confusing. I was like, what just happened? My father explained equity to me, so I went back to the library and I just started reading books. I just had faith in what I was reading, because sometimes when I would buy condos back then, they didn't cash flow positive. Sometimes they were slightly negative. Sometimes they were break even, but something dawned on me. And I feel like it was this broker who told me this, but I can't remember. But it dawned on me that if I can just hold on to them for a long time, the rent will eventually go up a lot. People don't have patience. The one thing I was very good at was systematic patience. Because if you have something that's zero cash flow now, like, man, like I'm subsidizing housing. I'm paying a little bit into it every month. That's okay. That's okay. What I cared about was, like, I wasn't worried about the average annual return or the cash on cash return. What I was worried about, what this thing would actually do for my life. So 10 years later, I started to feel it. Like, the thing that used to cash flow me $200 was now cash flowing me $600, $700. Huh. And I have 12 of these. Let me get a few more of these on the plate. Even though I would now get them in like 2013, 14, 15, I'm like, I'm not worried, because in 2023, these things will be, That's how my mind thinks. I don't think about what is the asset going to do for me right now. I think about what's the asset going to do for future me later. And I'm willing to wait the time. And you can probably tell I'm a buy and hold guy. I don't really sell much. It's what it does for my life. I don't care about rates, not in Quattro world, not when I have investors, but for myself, what I care about is what does it do? Does it pay my bills? Does it give me money? So when I'm overseas, Chris, I'm so proud of myself for this. I have to say, I'm proud of 23-year-old me for this. 47-year-old me is so proud of 23-year-old me because 47-year-old me is still living off the 14 of the paid off places that 23-year-old me started to buy. So even though I have 30 apartment complexes and this and that, I'm still living off the condos that my 20-year-old self bought. Man.
That was courage, right? That was courage, because I think for most of us, and it sounds like you got a lot of your education, and I think this is really important on the journey to financial independence. We have to seek teaching. And so 23-year-old you, I know you were spending a lot of time at the library. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I'll have to tell you a little side note is because, you know, my wife, who's Haitian as well, loves the libraries. And so after talking to you one day, I said, I was just talking to Maurice, like, is the love of libraries, is this a Haitian thing?
Oh, is it a Haitian thing? I don't know. It was free.
It was free. But then, from the library, where did you start getting some of your education? Because you probably realized, okay, I need to know more. I need to get advanced tactics. Yeah.
It was when, library was my main source of knowledge, along with brokers and stuff like that. But the library was my main source of knowledge from 2002 to 2015. If you think about it, Yahoo and Google and those things, they just came around. Like, Google was in its infancy in 2004 when I was starting, you know?
Yes.
In 2015, when I got the idea to do multifamily, because Facebook was listening to me and put an ad in my phone, I went to a multifamily seminar. I walked out of the seminar in 7 minutes. It was one of those introductory ones. I'm like, yep, this is the thing that I'm doing. And eventually I paid 50 grand for a one-on-one mentor. Now, here's the thing. I had 50. I think I sold a condo or something. Because I started to realize, why am I going to reinvent the wheel when this person has already done what I want to do?
Right.
It took me 2 years to do my first multifamily deal. And you know what got me over the hump? That mentor getting on a plane from Providence, Rhode Island. I love this story. This brother gets on, this older white gentleman gets on a plane from Providence, Rhode Island to come see my younger black self, okay? And I'm saying the colors for a reason, so bear with me. And he's like, clear your schedule for 48 hours. All right. So Craig comes down, we start talking. This man never really gave me like tactical stuff to do to go buy the real estate. What he was doing was messing with my mindset about it. And he said to me, what makes you think that you, Maurice, young black dude, are not as good as me, Craig, older white dude? Why do you think I'm better than you? Why do you think I can close deals and you can't? He's like, you're not better than me. He said, exactly. Go get a deal. I had a mobile home park under contract 3 weeks later.
Wow.
Just because that mentor went out of his way to get on a plane to come challenge me. Because every time I ran into a problem in a multifamily, status quo would pull me back to single family. I'm like, I'm good with the single family. I'll just go back there.
Mm.
This is what mentors do for you. So on an average annual basis now, I probably spend 100 to 150 grand yearly on education. Conferences, traveling to see people, mentors. I spend a ton because they are where I want to be.
Right. And I know that, you know, it's so interesting that we will spend, you know, how many now, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on an education where we have a lot of very gifted professors that understand theory of a lot of things, but people are hesitant to spend tens of thousands in dollars with people that have the been there, done that experience and really want to walk alongside you like Craig did to see you be right. successful and arguably sometimes right. kick you in the butt when you need it.
Yeah. Yeah. He kicked me in the butt and I say that all the time and we'll pay 100 grand for a paper degree as an outcome, but we won't pay 20 grand to someone who's done exactly what you want to do and can get you there in a 3-month time frame. It doesn't make sense, but I don't blame people. because 20 to 30 years of formal education and our family upbringing has told us that this is the path you are supposed to go down.
That's right.
Now, both of my children know the rules already. They got two things to do in life. One, be happy. Two, learn how to make money grow. That's it. If you want to go to college, dad's not paying for it because I don't know. You have to be happy and you have to learn how to make money grow. If you want to go to college as a rite of passage, or you want to go play football, you want to, I'm okay with that. But the thing that drives most of our ability in life is creating revenue such that we can, and not a lot. Some people just need $5,000 of passive income to live the way that they want to live.
That's
right.
Some
people need 10. Some people need more than that. Some people just need 2. Whatever the number is, learn how to apply your money to that. Get your basic needs covered, and then you are free to build from there. And then life changes. We don't necessarily need a paper degree, but I will not bash college either, because we need doctors. We need lawyers. But I love technical schools. There are plumbers who make 130 grand a year. There are HVAC specialists who make 190 grand a year, but only pay 10 grand to go to the school. Why are we going into this big system where we're paying 100 grand to get a music degree? No, I'm not hating on music, but why?
Right.
Because it's a system, and it's a business. Don't get it twisted. Colleges are a business. They are a business, right? We have to do self-education to free ourselves from all this stuff. And that's what I was very good at doing.
And then what did you learn? Like, I know that you understand how the ultra wealthy think, and it's different than what we think. And in fact, I this came to me the other day. Let me know what you think. We're going live with this right now. This is live. But I said the ultra wealthy, well, so middle class thinking is I am going to do my own budgeting and bookkeeping, and I'm going to outsource my wealth management. Where ultra wealth is, I'm actually going to outsource my bookkeeping and budgeting, and I'm going to do my own wealth management.
Yeah.
Right?
What I learned from wealthy people, man, I say it all the time, like, debt is a wealth tool. Self-education is a wealth tool. Hiring experts is a wealth tool. There's one particular person on LinkedIn. I was so fond of his information, I paid him $2,000 just to meet with him for an hour.
Mm.
Wealthy seek information and will pay for it. Will pay for someone's time, because that shows to that person you value their time. They won't waste your time. They will give you exactly what you need. Now, I joke, but I'm serious. For all the relative success that I've had, I think I know 7% of the rules of the rich. Chris, there's so much out there. Like, even having the conversation with you, learning about posturing for equity as a play, right? I learned something new. I learned about cost segregation studies and grander multifamily. One of the reasons I just bought this house cash is because I did take a distribution from a retirement account I had. I'm not going to pay any penalty because I have so much depreciation available to offset the taxes. I did the calculation. I'm like, no, I'm not going to pay any tax on that at all. The wealthy, as their number one tool, they minimize their taxes. They don't react to taxes. They plan for taxes. And then they take that money that they never paid into the tax system legally, and then they reinvest it over and over and over again. These rules are not exclusive to anyone. You have to go out and seek them and put them to use in your own life. I have done it to an extent. I can get better, like with whole life policies and things of that nature. But again, I'm not optimizing for money anymore. I'm optimizing for life fulfillment. So for everything I've done at this point, I'm like, nah, I'm actually really in a good position. I want to go live well. But I do pay attention. And I want to plug one book. I do pay attention. And one of the best books I've ever read relative to what we're talking about is Money Master the Game by Tony Robbins. And some people like Tony, some people don't. It's not a Tony book. Tony interviews 20 to 30 of the greatest financial minds you've ever, Jack Bogle, Mary Erdos from Fidelity, Sir John Templeton. Sir John Templeton, who ran Templeton Funds in the 90s, I learned something from him. When there's blood in the streets, that's when you get in there and you go buy stuff at a discount. Oh, I love wealth stuff, man. I mean, I'm so fascinated by it, but people have to seek the information themselves and apply it to their life.
They do. And the, and you're right. There's so many different levels to uncover. And I think on this journey, you know, and the greatest thing that I've learned, you know, is when you get on this journey, and I think especially now things have opened up with the internet and a lot of these conversations about financial independence, is you can meet other people and share ideas on the journey. There's so many more people now talking about this, doing this, and encouraging each other.
Exactly. And I'm a real estate guy, but the last conference I went to was Dealmaker Live, meaning I went to a conference specifically for fundraising, to create a fund, excuse me, a non-specific fund. Instead of, oh, I'm going to raise money for real estate, no, I'm just going to raise money in a fund and we'll figure it out. Now, I don't know if I'm going to do it, but after what I heard there, I'm like, what? How does this work? And I was just flabbergasted. They are skirting the whole financial system. They're making their own economy, and they're working with private people who want their money to grow in certain ways, who want nothing to do with Wall Street. So a friend of mine has a $100 million fund. Another friend has a $500 million fund. And here I'm like, maybe I'll do a $5 million fund and learn because I want to do something small.
Right.
It's just, it's fascinating, man. And but you have to go out and seek the information. There's me investing $5,000 to go to this conference, and then 3 days of my time. It's one of the best investments I ever made, if not for just the friendships and connections.
Right. And I mean, I think that's the big thing you take away from it too.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Well, I want to say thank you so much for your time, man. I always get so much value. You know, at the end of every session, we do have a little fire round. I'm going to hit you with five questions right now, and we're going to get, we're going to get the thoughts, the details. Let's, so right now, what is the way that you keep learning?
I mean, it's just what I told you. I seek conferences and people who are doing things in areas I know nothing about. It does not mean that I want to build a fund. It does not mean that I want to build some business. What it means is I want to seek information so I can make an educated decision for me later. That's one thing. And then the other way that I'm in constant learning is my travels. Man, Maurice, you've been to 98 countries over 350 times. You want to see the whole world? No. I want to be in a state of constant learning. When I go to Lebanon, for example, I've been to Lebanon 40 times. I'm starting to understand the country much more, the intricacies of how I get around, and people are starting to know me. I have a lot of friends there and what have you. I wanted to learn and immerse in something radically different than what I know. I just happened to choose that country to focus on, and it's been awesome. So between seeking knowledge for business and then just seeking relationships and immersing in culture, that's how I keep learning.
What soft skill helped your career the most?
Soft skill. Relationships, my ability to connect with people and build meaningful relationships. And that's one of the pillars in my coaching, is I mentioned it to you, like if you and I were just making friends with Accenture people, then we weren't building relationships in this other area of our life that was really important. Chris, there's no less than 30 countries that I could land in today where I wouldn't have a close friend come pick me up.
Wow.
I'm so proud of that fact. When people travel, some of the mistakes I think they make is they travel as a tourist. They don't travel with the intent to plug into what that community is. So here's a great hack, an example. The next time you go to some place that you don't know, you can order an Uber, that's fine. But when you order the Uber, get the guy or the girl's phone number and say, look, I'm going to call you directly. Come be my driver for the week. You know what happens with that? You build a friendship because you go into talking with the person. You are giving the person a lot more money than they would typically make. They are introducing you to their friends, family, and suggesting little nooks and crannies of the city that you never would have even known about. So now you've created this relationship with this person. And if you reinvest, this is what I do with people. I reinvest in them all the time. Remember when I said 98 countries over 350 times? Because I go back to the same places over and over and over, and I reinvest in those relationships. I keep showing up. That's the soft skill that has radically expanded my life, expanded my love for humanity, given me empathy towards all types of people. Wow. The Swami people of the Swami people of Finland. They're like the Native Americans of the US. They were persecuted too. I knew nothing about them, but I got like three Swami friends because I kept going back to learn about how they were hurt in history. people, man. Building meaningful relationships with people will help you so much on a personal and a business level. It's uncanny.
Mm. All right. So this one is the converse. What is the worst investing advice you ever received?
I want to scale. Mm. I hate that. There's nothing wrong with scale, or you should scale or something.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with scaling. When you are scaling as a consequence of wanting to help more people, I think it's a beautiful thing. When you are scaling in the context of, I want to make more money, I don't buy it. Because when you chase money, it runs. But when you make money out of a consequence of helping people, it's awesome. So we have scaled Quattro. So Quattro Capital is the syndication firm I have. And we've scaled. We've moved into new systems. We have about maybe 1,500 investors now. I think I've invested about 90 million of people's money. We had to scale our systems to support our investors. But that's me trying to provide a service to my investors. I have to do that.
Right.
On the coaching side that I do, I refuse to scale. I personally do not want to do group coaching so I can have 1,000 customers. Mm-hmm. I don't want to create a digital product. I don't. What I want, the goal for me in coaching, yes, I want to get paid. I do. My time is valuable. But selfishly, I want to build really deep connections and relationships with these amazing humans who are wanting to redesign their lifestyle into something they don't need a vacation from. So by the time we're done coaching after a 3-month period, we're friends. I have these amazing human friends all over the world, right? But I can only handle 10 people at a time, just time-wise. But it's immersion. It's beautiful, man. So no, I don't want to scale my coaching business. I want to keep it right where it is so I can connect with people in a meaningful way. So this default of you got to scale says who? Like, what is your goal for the whole thing? I don't like when people just automatically go to everybody has to scale.
When they default to that, yeah, it's too much.
Yeah.
What do you do to recharge your batteries?
I'm a gym rat again, thank God. My son, my oldest son, who I helped design his life, he is now a aspiring professional bodybuilder because he didn't want to be in the office environment. So we reverse engineered his lifestyle and how he's going to support it. But on August 3rd of last year, he came, which is my birthday. He looked at me and he pretty much said, "Dad, you look like shit. Where's the football dad I used to know who took care of himself?" And he just woke me up, Chris.
Wow.
And I was 252 pounds, where normally I should be roaming around 225. I was still going to the gym, but you cannot out-gym a bad diet. So I gave up beer. I started getting a certain amount of protein every day. I have not missed taking a set of supplemental vitamins in almost a year. I started a push-up challenge in May. I have not missed 1 to 200 push-ups a day in almost over 65 days now.
Wow.
I'm deadlifting 500 pounds again. My abs are back. Man, that's what I do to recharge. I'm at the gym every morning at 4 a.m., assuming I'm in town, but I'm doing something around 4 a.m. physically because that's what keeps me going.
And what would be the advice that you would give your younger self from what you know now?
Man, I'm proud of him. I would tell him, I just got emotional a little bit, but that journey, man, when I talk about it on LinkedIn now, it comes out as this seamless thing that happened. Right. No, not even close, right? What I would tell him is go find like-minded people as soon as you can.
Mm.
I did way too much of it on my own. And as I think about it today, just the amount of lonely nights between like Accenture during the day, street cop shit at night, real estate on the weekend, the fellas are going out, but I need to do tenants, termites, and toilet bowls and stuff. And I really never sought out support while I was doing it. I made a mistake. And it's such a visceral journey when you are trying to get your freedom and you have this drive. I had this drive behind me, man. Like I would have dared someone to step in front of me for what I was trying to achieve.
Yes.
There are certain things I want to achieve today. I don't think it's wise for someone to say that I can't. You probably don't want to get in front of me. But I did it a lot alone. But now I have folks like you. And now I have my business partners. And now I have people all over the world who understand me. And the LinkedIn community who appreciates the content I put out, because I did go on that journey and stuff. But that was a little bit too much for one person to handle, what I did. So it's tough to, when I think about it, it's a very hard thing for me.
No, it is. And this is where, you know, I want to thank you for sharing that here, because the reality is that this podcast is here because other people are on this journey. And they may not be talking about it. They may not be talking about money. They may not be talking about career. But ultimately, you know, to put a bow on this whole thing, right, is you figured out the career and how the career could give you the life that you wanted. And then you started doing extra time to say, well, wait, I need the career to then fuel this money thing so I can get to this point where I own my time.
Yes.
But it is, you know, and I mean, I'm blessed that the majority of this journey, you know, I had my wife, you know what I mean? But there was many years when I was trying to figure out the career thing where, you know, I was on the road alone and I had a tour of duty where I was in Asia and it was an amazing experience, made a lot of relationships, but there was also long nights feeling alone, doing a lot of solo traveling that is good. And I think what we want everyone to know listening is like, we're here. You know, Maurice is online on LinkedIn. He also is at trylifeon.com. Is that right?
You got it. Trylifeon.com. Yeah. Uh-huh. Maurice at trylifeon.com.
Yeah. And we're here. We're here on a podcast. You know, I've now started a monthly meetup so that we can just gather and have small intimate sessions where people can have like-minded people talking about career and money and everything that goes in between. I mean, last night, you know, we were talking with somebody who is, you know, now they're really focused on, you know, like us, like-minded, doing some real estate stuff. They've just had now their first kid and mom wants to take some time off of work. So now all of a sudden, okay, income's going to be decreasing. They're managing a lot of things going on. And some of us in this journey, we have to, what I call thread the needle. Like, it's like, okay, we're going to compress. We're going to do this for the family. It's good for the health. It's good for the time, but it's hard. And having people along the journey is so important.
It's hard. And I, you know, I appreciate you saying that. And anyone who's listening to this, like, send me a DM on LinkedIn or send me an email, maurice@trylifeon.com, or go through the Quattro Capital website, track me down. People who are entrepreneurially minded, there's nothing wrong with W-2, as I keep saying, but people who are entrepreneurially minded sometimes feel isolated and ostracized because it's not like they can just go back to work and be like, yo, I'm opening a coffee shop tomorrow. When at work you're supposed to be writing a strategic plan for that client, you're trying to do right by your company for sure, but you're also on this other thing, and when you don't have people to talk about it who understand it and have been there, it can be very isolating. So I encourage, go find someone, and if you cannot, then track me down, and I will be your support system in some kind of way.
That's beautiful. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. And for everybody listening, we are a new podcast. So please listen on Apple, Google, Spotify. Please leave us a review. Let us know what you're taking away from this podcast and tell somebody else, right? Tell somebody else, because this journey of career and money can be incredibly confusing, but we're here with you on the journey. Thank you.
We hope this episode was insightful and brought value to your day. If so, please be awesome and leave us a 5-star review. Find out how Team Quattro can help you at thequattroway.com and scroll down for more info. Until next time, this is the Real Estate Runway Podcast.